Nighttime on Still Waters. This is NB506812, narrowcasting into the night from somewhere on Britain's waterways. December 21st, Thursday, winter solstice. The year's turning and the longest night. There's a rough wind and angry skies. The pole star oak finally felled. The ducks don't seem to notice. It's another windy night that buffets the boat and makes the alders roar. But Christmas is almost here, and this is the Narrowboat Erica, narrowcasting into the darkness of a special night, to you, wherever you are. I'm so glad that you could join us as we celebrate Christmas Eve here aboard the Erica. So come inside, make yourself comfortable beside the stove while I get the drinks. Welcome aboard. It's Christmas Eve on the canal. Not that you could tell it that much. The ducks go about their squabbling ways, pushing through the water with puffed out chests. The swans preen and forage. The moorhens dart, chitter and flick along the waterside. All the time above them, the jackdaws hooligan and riot on black-caped wings, while the rooks look down their long beaks and read the fields for worms. It could be any eve of any year, but it's not. And all the while I sit here and wait for the skies to break open with angelic song, to flood the world with golden light, and dressing-gowned shepherds with unconvincing beards and baby lambs draped around their shoulders if they were feathered boas, to feign mock surprise and wonder. And for the convocation of trees at the top of the hill to burst out in a trumpet swell of jubilate and gloria in excelsis Deo. For behind that cloud, that big cloud, mushrooming and battleship grey, a great star shines, and caravans of wise men ride the sea like hills and vales on purse-lipped camels, and when they pass, if they ever do, there'll be a glint of gold. And the sheep field will swim with the smell of sheep droppings, fox musk, and the sharp scent of frankincense and myrrh. And of course, I wait for the sound of Christmas Eve, the rich hymning sound of bells and all that is warm and alive about Christmas, the rafter-raising chimes of steeple-rocking church bells, cantabile carillons in the bat-dancing hush of holy darkness, that roll like musical thunder over the rooftops of the sleeping villages. But most of all, I listen for the tiny cat bell ring of sleigh bells, distant, thin, and as fragile as icicles. And around me tumble from the brooding sky all the Christmas Eves of my past, falling silently in the great shaken snow globe of my mind. Great moth-like snowflakes, fat and feathery, each heavy with a sharp sweetness and half-forgotten dreams of laughter and torchlight. And the memories gather round me like old friends, as comfortable and as welcoming as old slippers. Soft they fall, those Christmases of my younger self, those old Christmas Eves of long, long ago. Oh yes, I remember. I remember how in those days Christmas was such a long time coming. Each Christmas took an eternity of waiting. the agonizing expectation of how many more sleeps yet to go. And when December broke, we were nearly there. We were on the downward roll by then. Each never-ending day ticked off by the solemn ritual of peeling open the paper advent calendar door to reveal a little picture, printed in primary colours and slightly out of register. These were the days before advent calendars dispensed chocolates or little gifts. Festive pictures, if you're lucky, sprinkled with glitter, that stuck to stubby fingertips or showered upon the carpets in a snowstorm of brittle stardust. However, the countdown had started long before that. At school, preparations were already well underway. Christmas presents and decorations were crafted from toilet rolls, shiny coloured foil that flashed and shone magic under the fluorescent classroom strip lights, coloured tissue paper that tore if you sneezed and stuck to wet fingers, and lots of cotton wool snow. And there were blunt round-ended scissors that bent and ripped the coloured sugar paper and old tissue boxes, but could never cut it, and great white plastic bottles of Copidex that smelt of ammonia, and Grizzer said it smelt like the pig's pee on his dad's farm, and it dried white on our fingers and knuckles in leprous scabs, and if you rubbed your hands together really quickly, it turned into little rubber balls that you could flick like bogies with one finger at Julie Tricker because she had pigtails and was pretty, and the teacher would tell us to stop it and to get back to our work. And we'd look outside the window at Christmas falling out of the grey sky like angels and snowflakes. And slowly, our handmade Christmas decorations would emerge from the catastrophe of cutting and offcuts. An anemic Santa, rudely drawn and rudely coloured with pencil stubs and wax crayon grease, sticking at a strange angle out of a toilet roll chimney, covered in wisps of Copidex snow and billows of cotton wool smoke. Another year, it was a table decoration of pine cones, covered with glitter of shocking colours. And once we made our own advent calendars in the shape of a Christmas tree, 24 clumsy and wonky hand-drawn exuberantly coloured parcels that you could peel open to reveal more pictures hidden underneath. But what is the point of an advent calendar that you could know what the hidden picture would already be? And my pencils never behaved anyway, and the little red toy steam engines looked like a red stack of bricks smoking a dog end of a cigarette, and the snowman looked like a carrot sticking out of a number 8. Yes, I remember Christmases of long, long ago. Shake the snow globe and make it swirl, Leicester Square and Piccadilly, turn the world of Santa Claus white. And these days, from this blizzard, the flakes fall not so much as distinct memories of each Christmas, but just as each perfect snowflake, once it falls, merges into a magical iced ocean of white, so all my Christmases of childhood meld and merge into one sweeping landscape. But they're no less warm or magical or filled with light for that. Yes, there are flashes, gem clear, of finding a lumpy pillowcase at the foot of my bed, and with a feeling of unbelief running my fingers over the jumble of shapes in the darkness. Then, tiptoeing out of bed to turn on the light, and finding a parcel that I could tell was a book, and silently opening it so as not to wake anyone. I remember there were two books inside, one on space exploration, one on mountain climbing, alternating pages of pictures and writing, and in the hushed Christmas pre-dawn of a waiting morning, I sat up in bed and climbed the Matterhorn and Mount Everest. Yes, there are lots of fragmented pictures and images, but most of all, it's the feelings that I remember. Oh, and the aromas. Those special smells and scents, forever wedded to the magic of Christmas's past. Oranges were a rare and special treat in those days, and the exotic perfume of satsumas and clementines announced Christmas had come to the house. And of course, the fresh waxy tang of pine trees, that if you pushed your head between the scratchy tickle of its branches, you could still smell the outdoors on each needle, and reindeer, and snow, and lighted igloos. And then there was the hot candle wax, and living flame that danced in the hidden breeze that blew through the window panes, and rubber hot water bottles, and new slippers, and wax crayons, and bath cubes that smelt of lily of the valley and crumbled into chalk between your frog-wrinkled fingers, and sage and onion stuffing. And the smell of hot metal and scorched dust when Dad put on the central heating, making the radiators gurgle and hiss. And the sharp smell of eardrops for my constantly troublesome ears, and condensation that beaded down the metal window frames, and the smell of new annuals and their hard, glossy covers. I knew I'd grown up, although didn't feel it, when I no longer got a comic annual for Christmas. For that was still in the unimagined future, and the world was still young, and had much more to give. And Christmas was exotic. We had little glass bowls of nuts that never seemed to go down. Knuckle-hard hazelnuts, walnuts, and almonds like shriveled fossils of orange segments which you had to gnaw the creamy kernel from the broken shells. And the bowl of nuts never used to go down the entire Christmas. The widow of Zarephath may have had a jug of oil that never ran out, but we had bowls of nuts that never ran out. And next to them was kept a metal nutcracker, of a tarnished silver colour, and which left a strange smell on your fingers after using it. And the walnuts always beat me, and when a grown-up opened one for me, it looked like a little brain, and tasted bitter. And there were dates, too, in lozenge-shaped boxes made of thin wood, and included a little wooden pick that tasted of lollipop sticks. The dates themselves, thick and brown and stickily oily. I viewed them with suspicion. They reminded me of the tinned stewed prunes that Auntie Kay and Auntie Charlie used to eat for breakfast. They were treats for grown-ups, although the coloured box wrappers enchanted me with a promise of countries of deserts and oases crossed by caravans of sneering camels, and little cups of thick sweet tea and sultans and Aladdin and minareted buildings, lands that beckon to me from the far borders of my imagination. And food was in abundance. Battenberg cake, or as we knew it, church windows, alongside the Christmas cake and the ice sponge that Sis and I helped Mum to decorate. Year after year we always used the same decorations, often still complete with a wedge of rock-hard icing from the year before, which, when no one was looking, I used to gnaw off like Tilly used to gnaw at her bone. The fact that Father Christmas in some sort of space rocket and a little girl on a toboggan were far bigger than the tree or the pillar box used to worry me rather. But it was the savoury things that appealed to me most. Twiglets. Oh, the unparalleled delight over pushing a thumbnail through the cellophane and opening the cardboard lid of the box to inhale the gloriously Marmite aroma of Christmas. Coloured glass baubles, tinsel and twiglets made my Christmas complete. Actually, twiglets were also a birthday treat sometimes too. One incident forever written into family history was when we had a party in which several of my school friends came. As far as I remember, it was the one and the only time that we had one, apart from the in-house affairs that I had to admit that I preferred. But this year, we all went up to Windsor for a treat. And Graham something or other ran around Windsor Castle with two twiglets stuck up his nose, and Dad still goes all white and shaky at the thought of it. But it's Christmas that I always associate with twiglets. One year, I sucked and licked all the Marmite off them and left the twigs on the plate. I can't remember what Mum said, but perhaps it's just as well. And Mum used to serve small glass dishes in which sliced tomatoes and cucumber were arranged. And the cucumbers were my favourite. They were soaked in vinegar and a spoonful of sugar. And if I was lucky, at the end of the evening when everyone had gone home, I was allowed to drink the vinegar. And sometimes the sugar was still not completely dissolved and would crunch deliciously vinegary between my teeth. Shake the snow globe again, and new snows fall, snow upon snow. Two children, one kneeling, one standing on the windowsill of a large bay window, waiting for Mum to return along the rainy street, carrying a Christmas tree. Holly clipped from the bush beside the coal shed and Mrs. Fuller's, and decorations dragged in battered cardboard boxes out of the loft and the top of a wardrobe. The needful transformation of home had begun. And there were always packets of balloons. Sis and I would pour them out onto the table like cold rubbery fish and then try to blow them up. I wasn't very good at it. I could never tie the neck. And so they'd fizz and shriek around the living room. We bought them from Kingham's, the village printers and stationers, where we'd also buy packs of coloured gummed strips to turn into paper chains that hung and drooped across the ceiling to entangle the balloons that we battered like cats to one another. A lot of the decorations were paper, some of them from Mum and Dad's childhood. An angel, that when you opened it up, had a white bell-like body of honeycomb paper, and a coloured ball and a bell, and sagging tissue-papered concertinas of garlands. And of course, the coloured glass baubles and tinsel, and Dad would wrap the reel of coloured lights, checking each bulb to see if it was securely screwed in. And we also had little candle holders which clipped onto the branches, and they still contained the malformed wax stubs of old candles from the past. Mum said they used to have them when she was a little girl, and they were added along with the rest of the decorations for old time's sake. They added a depth of history to the proceedings. And we had bundles of tinsel, but there was a shortish length of electric purple tinsel that was my favourite. It was almost the purple of chocolate wrappers. And over the successive Christmases, we grew up together. As I grew taller, it grew shorter and more threadbare. Christmases evolve. They have to, because we inhabit them differently. The old Christmases of my childhood diminished in proportion to that small strand of tinsel. And that's it. When I look back and forward at Christmas, it's the waiting, the preparation, the excitement of something different that has, oh, so nearly come. Perhaps that's why Christmas Eve will always be true Christmas for me. The older me still feels that same eager expectancy that the younger me felt. It wasn't about the presents, or at least now and for a long time. It's not about the presents. It's about something different, something warm, something filled with light, occurring in the midst of winter's gloaming. Waiting for Dad to clock off early from work and come home in the afternoon when it was still light. Getting ready to go out and to meet up with the uncles and the aunts. Mum had a brother and a sister, both married with families. And we alternated our visits over the Christmas period. But Christmas Eves were always the most exciting. The drive there was always one of the best parts. Looking at the decorations hung in the lit windows of houses and the towns that we'd pass, then down the lanes, bordered with the prickly tangled brush of winter brown hedges. Chestnut, hazel, russets and sienna, interspersed with the skeletal forms of oak and beech and ash and elm, tangled like scarecrow hair against the darkening sleigh-ridden sky. Seeing relations three times in such close succession must have been a bit of a strain. I remember Mum and Dad saying to each other once that the problem is, by the third visit, you'd run out of things to say. Although us children didn't suffer from that. It was only later that I realized how much hard work it was to find things to talk about. We were content with playing with each other's toys. And then there was the television. Both sets of uncles and aunts had televisions, color ones too, when they came out. And after tea, perched on sofas and poofs or just lying on the floor, we would all sit round and laugh until our ribs ached and we panted for breath. And the grown-ups would say how clever it was and how did they think up these things? And sometimes a band would play. It was just like on the radio, but not quite right. Herman and the Hermits, no milk today. And one of their older relatives would say, is that a boy or a girl singing? It's quite impossible to tell these days. And there would be a general hubbub of conversation about how different things are now. And Wendy, who was the eldest of us all, would humph. And one Christmas Eve, we watched Apollo 8, listening to the strange, almost unearthly voices so far away, spoken by the ghosting slow-motion figures. I was 8, too old for Santa and his sleigh. But enchantment still filled the edges of my world. But I'd found a new universe, filled with stars to replace the old one. And after a while, someone would say about the danger of the kids getting square eyes, and the television would be turned off. We would all sit and watch the picture disappear into a little tiny dot in the middle of the screen, a bit like the USS Enterprise from Star Trek. In reverse. And there was a moment's silence, as if the world was too embarrassed to make an entrance and was hiding in the corners. And then, who wants to be Father Christmas? One of the uncles would boom, and the world once more was filled with colour and noise, and presents swapped under the tree would then be handed out. Shake the globe one last time. Bundled up against the cold, two sleepy children, clutching their new toys or books, led to the car for the drive home. Yes, I remember that well too. That slight smell of engine oil and cold vinyl of the old minivan. KMF 301B. The rattling purr of the engine, the hiss of tire on wet road. The sporadic click, click, click of the indicator. And Wendy and I would stare out of the windows into the sky. And one year, one of us, and I can't remember who, said, do you see it? What? In the sky, a sleigh and a reindeer, over there. But neither of us believed it really. But I thought I might have seen something. Flying meteor-like fast, silver against black, high up, where Telstar and the satellites orbited. I could, of course, have been wrong, but I did swear that I could hear sleigh bells. And the dark world sped past us, Christmas trees and coloured lights in lit windows, the old landmarks, the coloured lantern that hung outside the house on the blind bend, the signpost that stood on its little green triangle of grass, the old gnarled oak tree whose trunk jutted out into the road, the old church where ghosts and bishops in pointy hats and shepherd crooks slept, dozing, waking at the shift in gear or slowing down for a junction, too tired to open eyes. The soft, comforting rattle and hum of the car, the murmur of voices in the front. I wonder what Father Christmas will bring. Dozing again, heavy head curled onto the back seat. Click, click, click. Shift down in gear, slowing. Then a swinging turn into the entrance of the garage. Waiting for the longed-for but awful click of the ignition key and the sudden all-encompassing silence as the engine stopped. I hated that silence. Knowing I'd have to open my eyes, get up, move. Time to get up and walk up those steps to the front garden and home. And bed seemed so far, far off. It didn't snow much in the Christmases of my childhood, and I don't remember it ever having bothered me. I could imagine wisps of snow among the whirl of starlight following Santa's sleigh in a sky of royal blue and indigo. But I do remember that it did once. I must have been small. I can remember opening my eyes to see smooth sugar drifts of waves covering the garden and the flower beds that sparkled in the street light, and Dad scooping me up in his arms and carrying me up the garden path. I can remember thinking that it was Christmas, and the rattle of key and lock, the front door swinging open, the smell of conifer and hot water bottles soon. I was being carried through the snow into Christmas. And I just want to wish you the happiest and merriest of Christmases. Happy Christmas. And happy Christmas to our Lock Wheelers too. They are Rebecca Russell, Alison on the Narrow Bookmarker, Derek and Pauline Watts, Anna V, Orange Cookie, Donna Kelly, Mary Keane, Tony Rutherford, Arabella Hodsapfel, Rory with MJ and Kayla, Narrowboat Precious Jet, Linda Reynolds-Birkins, Richard Noble, Carol Ferguson, Tracy Thomas, Mark and Tricia Starr, Madeline Smith. So this is the Narrowboat Erica, signing off for the night and for the year, wishing you a very restful and peaceful night. Good night. Temperature outside, 9.3 degrees. Inside, 20 degrees. Humidity, 87%. Dew point, 8 degrees. Wind direction, west. Wind strength, 13 miles per hour. Barometric pressure, 1015.2, rising. Cloud cover, 91%. Cloud ceiling, 30,000 feet. Precipitation, 2.54 millimeters. Moon phase, 90% waxing gibbous. Day length, 7 hours, 42 minutes. Sunset, 15:57. Sky casting, 8:15.